This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome. Hope you're enjoying Teachers Week. Gets kind of long, doesn't it? For all of us, just a lot of sitting, a lot of listening, and hopefully it's been a blessing, inspiration. I always enjoy it. Do you feel overwhelmed at times? Do you ever feel like I'm just really not doing very much right at all? I've felt like that way many times. It's like, why didn't I ever do that? Why didn't I think of that? So it is one of my concerns about these type of weeks. They're so loaded with information, so many ideas, and two things to remember. You're usually listening to speakers who are sort of in their element, all right? So, Jeff Swanson is over there doing music. He's in his element. Does a marvelous job. But he maybe doesn't teach English, and math, and science, and social studies, and spelling, and history, all right? Some of you need to do all of those. But you're listening to teachers who kind of specialize in their thing, and so it looks like, you know, wow. Well, you can't do all of those things. Secondly, you might even be a little disappointed if you would go in their classrooms and it doesn't all flow quite as well as you might think. Just being honest, certainly how it is in my classroom, as I've taught. We hold the ideal up, but it doesn't always work out so well. So remember that. Take one thing here, one thing there that you can implement and learn. Put the other things on hold maybe for another day, another time. Pull them out when you can. I just do not like when teachers leave feeling discouraged. Like, why am I doing this? I can't keep up. I can't do all these things. So, authority and structure for a disciplined classroom. I wonder sometimes, have we shifted a little bit in our thinking about how much authority do parents and teachers have over their children? Now, I know a lot of you are fairly young, but some of you have been around many years. I talked to a teacher one time recently. He was a long-term teacher. He wasn't teaching now in the last few years. And I asked, you know, do you miss the classroom? He said, no, not really. He said, you know, what he was saying is that I don't think I could fit back in this school anymore. He said, things have changed. It's kind of these new ideas these young people are bringing in. Things are more restless, they're not as structured, they're not as respectful and disciplined. He said, I don't know that I could really go back in and just feel like I really fit the culture anymore. It's a very conservative school that I get into sometimes, and I don't know that I necessarily observe that, but I'm going to the next time I go. I hope it's none of your schools. I really don't know. But I've thought about that different times. Have we been affected by this whole thing that you just let children kind of go, you give them a good culture to be in, and you just, you know, don't be too controlling here. I don't know. Do you have any comments? Not really.
Our students are very respectful. Appreciate it.
Okay, good. And please don't hear me saying we have bad schools. This is not an issue of judging our students or anybody, but it's more of a philosophy of education, of authority. And sometimes I do hear sort of almost an alarm from older ministers and parents saying, wow, I mean, it's just going to be okay. This way of just kind of letting them do, not really correcting them, certain ways of discipline. Well, you know, not so sure that that's quite right anymore. I'm concerned about that because we can go off track and be influenced by some thinking that will not reap what we really want to see in our schools and in our church cultures. All right, let's begin just by going through this. I'm sorry there are not quite enough of copies. I guess they just went by those who had officially registered for the class and gave me my stack of copies. So we are, somebody did turn some in. Or maybe they made, I think they did give me copies of what happened. Anyhow, raise your hand if you need a copy. I think it was just a few here and there. Who else? Is there a few in the back? over here. Any others? All right, just a simple outline just kind of guide our discussion. So number one, what are some of the goals of a disciplined classroom? This is a fear, maybe you have heard me say this before, this is a fear that probably all of us face, even experienced teachers. It's sort of what nags, kind of is in the back of your mind, can I control the classroom? I want, you know, I don't want this thing to get out of control. I want my students to like me, but I know that's a trap. So how do I navigate being a teacher that they respect and all goes okay, but not err on the side of just looseness where things get out of hand, because a disciplined classroom is really the infrastructure of a good school year. You can be the best teacher in terms of you're able to articulate the lessons, you're able to demonstrate things, you know your material, but if there's a lack of discipline and structure, it really does collapse. And it's a fear, I think, that we face at different levels, and it's a proper thing to really care about and to spend a good bit of time thinking about before the first day of school. So what is one of the goals? To create a peaceful atmosphere where learning can take place. It's a very simple statement, but let's flesh this out a little more. You have the authority and the responsibility to create a peaceful atmosphere. So with your responsibility is authority. Now I want to emphasize that. It's important that you think about whatever my responsibility is, I must have authority to do it. That's one of the most frustrating things, to be asked to do something, but you really don't have the authority to enforce it. Well, I assume you understand that if this is your responsibility, then you have the authority to make it happen and accept that authority. That should be an humbling authority, an humbling thought that you have been given authority over other people's children to ask them to cooperate, to discipline them when they do not. Because the goal is we need to teach these children, and there's a context and an atmosphere in which this can successfully happen. So you're given the responsibility and the authority. Where you don't have the responsibility, you don't have the authority. I'm sometimes almost amused with this. That child is your responsibility only up to that 3 o'clock point, or 2:30, or whenever you get out of school. The minute they walk out, you lose authority. They get in the vehicle to go home, and as they pull out, sometimes it is a relief, right? The responsibility's over, and the authority's over. You can't reach into that home at all. And in fact, it would be frustrating if you would try to reach into the home and change something. So knowing where your responsibilities stop and start is important, because your authority. So Sunday mornings, that same child with the same problem, but it's not your problem anymore. Do they ever turn around, those little children, and look at you in church? You know what? They know where you are. The longer you teach, the more that is true. They know where you are in the auditorium. And they do something they shouldn't do, and they turn around and look at you. Oh, those are lovely moments. So you can use your relationship, etc., with them in that way. But what you can do is reach front and bang, 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 tap them on the shoulder. No, you're no longer responsible for them. Therefore, your authority, it's not there. So knowing where it stops and starts is important, and staying within that. Just as a quick illustration, you think of all the players in a child's life. We have the parent, we have the teacher, and we could put school board or administration here. But it is overlapping. Where is the student? I suppose right here, huh? They have all these authorities at different times and in different ways. The frustration comes where we try to reach in territories that are not ours. And, of course, at times, you maybe feel frustrated that somebody tried to reach into your territory. we need to think humbly about that, but I think that visual to me just helps me think about we have overlapping interests in the lives of these children, but we must stay focused on what is our focus and our domain. And at times we see some very disappointing or troubling things that we realize we cannot do anything about. And I want to encourage you as teachers to somehow be able to not allow that to just almost ruin you. We can have this compulsion to fix problems that finally are not ours to fix. This does not mean we're looking in the homes and saying, oh, there's all these terrible problems. But at times there are significant problems, and we see them. And we realize that the needs that the child is bringing to school is really not a problem that they created, but they suffer the consequences. You don't have to look very far to see at least some of that. They are suffering the consequences of other people's choices, and you care about them, you love them, you're compassionate, you wish you could fix this problem, and you can't. Don't take a burden on you that is not yours. You didn't create the crisis. You didn't create the situation. Doesn't mean we don't care, but it means we don't take a burden that God did not expect us to carry. We're not the savior of every situation. We're not the savior of these problems. And, oh, I just need to. I've seen teachers, and I've certainly felt it in my own heart already, with just almost a desperate feeling. Something has to be done. I mean, God sees it. And so if we take weight that we can't, that isn't ours, we will emotionally burn out because of the weight and the care we feel. Care and weight is two different things. We love, but we don't assume responsibility. So just think, the more we can kind of pair those together, authority and responsibility, helps us to know a little bit where that stops and starts. Number two, look for ways to reduce distractions. This is under your authority. You can close the blind. You can turn the fan on. It's your decision. Don't allow those little things that the children almost handle those things. I remember being in a school a while ago, and it's a very unique set of windows. Listen, if you have anything to do with building a new school, just the windows don't have to be down like this. They can just be up a little bit. Well, this was at a perfect spot where I think I can say every time a vehicle went by, because it wasn't a heavily traveled road, most of the students all looked out the window. It was humorous to watch. The teacher never saw it, I guess. Multiple grades, so understandable. He was taking care of his students. And then it goes a tractor. And almost all of them, but they had to just go up a little bit, turn and look. And then they go back down again. I just watched it maybe 4 or 5 times, and that's 10, 15 minutes, because it wasn't heavily traveled. So they, you know, there had been lots of traffic, they would have gotten used to it. Well, the teacher could have went and just closed all those blinds. How simple. But maybe the students would have said, hey, well, maybe he never saw it either. Look for those distractions. Little things, sharpening pencils in the middle of the day, especially for lower grades. You know, doesn't take a whole lot of observation for you to see what's distracting the students that you could take care of. And again, you have the authority to do that. Don't be intimidated by students complaining about your disciplines and about last year's teachers. Have you ever had that happen, anybody? Well, last year, well, tell me what you do about that. Last year, the teacher, it isn't amazing how great last year's teacher was? Wow, you hope next year you're that great. It usually goes that way. They reflect on the positive. All right, what do you do? Yes. Okay. Yeah, they right. They soon caught on with that, man. Especially middle grades, upper grades. What else do you do? What do you say? What don't you say? What would be a negative way of responding to that?
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. Kind of that. I don't care. What else?
Downgrading the other teacher.
Downgrading. Yes. Listen. Students watch how we respect each other on the faculty. And this does, I think, really matter. They watch, especially if you teach in a larger school. See, for quite a few years, I taught in a large school. Some years I was in a smaller one. But we had 12, 13 on the faculty. The students would compare. They would say things. You heard it once in a while. Sometimes they will. This is a teacher, that teacher. They stayed in the playground too long. We didn't get, you know, whatever. Well, last year this. Be so careful to never say, well, I don't think that was a very good idea, so we're not going to do that. You can say, well, that's what they did. That was up to them. That's fine. But this year, we're going to do it this way. But never in a way that they smell that, oh, he didn't think that was a good idea, because they will pick that up and it just breeds disrespect. Yes, tell them. If you want to know how they did it last year, you'll ask. You can do this in a nice way, I think. There's kind of a fine line. You want your students to have a sense that they can contribute and talk. You listen to what they say. You don't make it look stupid. But neither do you want to feed that to the point that they're endlessly raising their hand. A teacher a little while ago, she said, I don't know what to do. She said, I can hardly get through my day. They just raise their hand and raise their hand. Well, last year we did it this way. Well, can we skip this here? She said, it's just all day long. Do you have to put up with that? You don't have to have the attitude of, no. You know, they ask us, no, just, you know. But neither do you want them just to lead you all around with all those suggestions. And we can fall into that, especially as newer teachers, that, well, we want them to, you know what, right? I just simply suggested, I would tell them that they may not raise their hand for anything outside of questions and what has to do with the class. During class, if it's something else, they need to say it another time. And if it's just suggestions about how to do something or last year, if I have a question, I'll ask you. And other than that, just keep your hands down. They understand that. In fact, they'll be happier that way too. You simply may not raise your hand to ask to skip an assignment or those kind of things. If I have a question, I'll ask you. If not, let's stay focused on what we're doing. You have the authority to do that. You want a classroom where they can learn, not one that just endlessly stirs and stirs. Letter B, to create a secure atmosphere where students feel safe. I have 2 points that I'd like to look at. Simply that some children are naturally insecure. Not because they're trauma children. My youngest daughter, a couple years ago, when she went to first grade, fairly big school, big teachers. I was no longer there as administrator. And so this was, you know, in first grade, dad's not at school anymore, as she was used to thinking, school's dad's all connected. She had a lot of tears. And I was so thankful for a steady teacher who knew that, worked very well with it, communicated well with my wife, and she soon got in the flow of things and school went well. If she would have been a very undisciplined teacher and structured would have been just, you know, just loud and shifty, it wouldn't have gone well at all. She went into second grade, again, a very steady teacher, just very understanding, and it was such a blessing. Some children have faced difficulties that have made them insecure. Teachers, I think you need to try to figure out what can you do and still keep control of your classroom. And some years, it's going to be a little different than other years. There may be years where you can't do some of the last minute things because the children just can't handle that. Or balloon day is a classic example. How many know what I mean by balloon day? All right, some of you do, quite a few of you do. How does that go? So tomorrow we have balloon day. Or worse yet, tomorrow is gonna be a day like we've never had before. What are we gonna do? Just wait, it's gonna be fun. So see you in the morning. Now some children, even in the middle grades, will not sleep so well that night. They do best if every day is just about the same. Does that sound boring to you? It does. I'm sorry. You're probably saying, you just taught a couple years too many. But I've heard teachers that, you know, well, every week we want something fun, something extra. After a while, maybe you run out of ideas and the children actually don't like this as well as you thought. Of course, diversity is a spice of life. There are ways to have diversity. But to feel this compulsion that we need to do lots of action, lots of fun, and surprises, Some children can handle it, yes, but some cannot. They will go home and they are distraught. They will not sleep well. They will not want to even maybe come to school the next day because that makes them feel very insecure. You maybe say, well, they're just control freaks. Well, that is true. That is a problem sometimes, especially with trauma children. But just knowing that you will be there and we're going to go through our classes, that methodical day after day is really, I think, what makes the happiest students. And from an educational standpoint, this is the most successful. Now, of course, there's some diversity. Maybe one year you can do Balloon Day, which for those who do not know what that means, there's many ways of doing it, but the basic way, I guess, is putting in different things you're going to do during the day. You got the basic structure, right? Lunch is still lunch. Recess maybe is where it belongs, but the classes. So pop this one balloon and whoop, English class. All right, we're going to have an English class instead of whatever. And then you're done with that. Pop, this says Bible memory. Again, some years it may work well. Children enjoyed it. Everything stayed under control. Other years, it may not work so well. The student, you just notice one or two, they just are on edge all the time. That noise, that uncertainty about what's next just does not work. And I've certainly seen this play out in classrooms where the teachers had a lot of diversity. And I remember visiting one room one time and she was just ready for English class. All right, everybody's ready for English class. She's a fairly creative teacher and a lot of good in that, please understand. But she's just ready and suddenly she's like, should we sing Anthony a song? Yeah. All right, let's sing him a song. They all got up front and sang, and then they went back to class. Well, it was okay, but it was obviously out of the norm or out of the flow. And so they all got back and sat down. What kind of attention do you think she had? Or how many of those students wanted to just look back and see what I thought maybe and see if, Well, it disrupted the flow that they were expecting. Most students, again, can be okay with that, but not always. And as I just observed, the teacher created some drama that seemed beyond necessary. Again, please understand the context here. There are those special things we do. Just remember, be sensitive to the culture and the type of students that you're working with. All right, an atmosphere for the student, not the teacher. Why do I say this? The longer you teach, do you find that having a no-nonsense day is really what you want? Yeah, some people, I think, understand this. In other words, just, I want to teach. I have a life outside that's emotionally demanding. I don't want a lot of drama. I just want, let's just, have school. I want everything to go well. Understandable. But I found myself to be motivated by what works for me versus what works for them. In other words, it's selfish. And so this varies with teachers. Some teachers are very relational. Others are more academic, and you could put them in other categories. Can you identify which one you are as a teacher? Are you very relational? Like, why do I teach school? I like to ask people that. So what do you enjoy about teaching? Some will say, most will say, I love children. I love teaching because I love children. And here's a way I can be with children all day long and I can get paid for it, sort of. And so that's a motivation to teach school because of the opportunity to engage with children and you love it. And that is okay, but it comes with its traps, doesn't it? The other side is maybe more academic. I get to study. I love study. I got these books and, hey, yes, I teach children. But children can be then an irritation pretty quickly. Some foolishness is very annoying very quickly because, hey, we're here for the academics. So we have this range from relational teachers, from relational to academic. Should you try to be something different than who you are? Of course not. Be comfortable in your skin. If you're a relational teacher, be aware of the traps, though, that fall with your classroom atmosphere with the relational. If you are very academic, remember the traps that go with that. Disrespect can happen on both of these ends. Disrespect here because the teacher finally doesn't have control of the classroom. Let me assure you, your children will come to despise you if you don't take authority and run your classroom well. I can remember, I was teaching 9 and 10, and some sort of intimidating students, a lot of students, big school, and might have been my first year back at that school, I can't quite remember. But we were trying to decide which game to play. And the bell, I think, had rung. It was activity time, half an hour, end of the day, or normal. And rather than just choose, I had, and you can do this sometimes, ask. So how many want to play volleyball? Maybe I counted, you know, K-12, 13. Well, how many want to play softball? Okay, whatever. And it was kind of close, and I kind of messed around. You know, okay, now wait a minute. How many wanted to? And I was maybe watching those that I really cared about. I'm not sure. You know, that one or two that you really hope that they voted for the game you're going to play. Do you know what I mean by that? Some of you do? Okay, good. One time, after a while, a girl just raised her hand. She said, just decide. She said it about like that. It wasn't nasty, but it was on the edge. In other words, let's just go out and play something. She smelled that I was trying to make sure that at least as many people were happy as possible and was a little insecure. No, just decide. Okay, let's go. So keep that in mind. That's the disrespect that these people struggle with over in the academic. Well, that's pretty easy to understand that one, right? Tend to be a little more distant, a little more cold, a little more methodical. Where do these teachers eat their lunch? Walk by their classroom. Where do they tend to eat their lunch?
At their desk.
At their desk. The children are talking and laughing and carrying on at their desk, reading a book. Where are these teachers eating their lunch?
With their students.
I had a teacher not long ago ask me, a very academic teacher, he said, what are some things I can do? Yeah, eat your lunch with your students. Just make yourself go be with them, even though it doesn't feel quite comfortable. You know what, your students probably don't even know sometimes how insecure we are as teachers, right? They don't know how intimidating they can be, how uncomfortable we can be just walking up and just talking to them, or just sitting there. We maybe feel like we're not quite welcome. I understand that. But academic teachers, do that anyhow. You will gain a lot when it comes then to trouble because you're interacting with them and you're building a relationship. Don't just, because they don't feel comfortable, keep that distance. So I think it's important to think about, where are my strengths? Where are my weaknesses? Do not try to become a different kind of teacher. This is beautiful. I loved working with this variety. But remember, there's edges. There's traps with both of those. And hopefully you can identify a little bit where you fit in. Communicating disciplines, state them positively when possible. Rules tend to feel negative. Some rules simply, I guess, are negative. Because it's don't this and don't that. But you can make some of them positive. You can say, do not write in your textbooks. Do not scribble them. Or you could say what? Give me a suggestion.
We want to keep our textbooks looking nice.
Yes.
Therefore, we don't write.
Yes. Excellent. Let's keep our textbooks clean and free from marks and scribbles. There is something about as soon as you say, well, listen, one thing I don't want you to do, there's a little bit in some students' hearts, it's kind of like, really? Just kind of that negative? We all feel that way. It's understandable. When we can, keep them positive. Don't quickly add rules out of frustration. Now, this is one that especially teachers, experienced teachers, face in the middle of the school year, right? You have these rules and policies, and partway through the year, I am sick and tired of. Isn't that a famous saying or way of saying something? I am sick and tired of it. Watch out. Yes, I get sick and tired of things too. But in that moment is not the moment to decide what to do, especially not in the middle of the day. I think I've done this already, sitting back on my desk. And you almost jump out of your chair. Like, all right, you know, students, here's one thing that we're going to change. You know, impulsive. Students can smell if you are making more rules out of frustration or if it is for their good. One of the frustrations that I certainly have faced is students not putting their names at the top of the paper. And when they hand them in, because I do not take grades, had not taken grades, I'm not a teacher right now, but I almost never took grades in class, just for various reasons. So I collect lots of papers. So the last teaching I'd done a few years ago, I taught 7 and 8, or 7, but worked with 8th grade as well. So there was almost 30 students. Well, you get 30 papers coming in, 4 of them don't have names. How are you supposed to figure out who those 4 are? Now, it's pretty tough. So it's, I think, a lot different to tell your students, you know what, I'm really getting tired of this and a little bit frustrated. Last night, I had this whole stack of papers, and 4 of you didn't put your name on it. Now, how in the world am I supposed to figure out whose paper this is? So from here on, every time you forget to put your name on, it's just a minus 5% at the top. So today, make sure you put your name at the top of the paper, or you're going to get a 5% discount. Right. So it's, you know, I'm tired of this. It's a little different tone than if we say, you know what, students, last night I had all these papers and 4 of you didn't have your name on it. And it is a little bit of a problem. I can't quite figure out whose is whose. And you know what? Life is all about learning responsibility, even in the detail. So 5% off if you forget. Hate to do it, but I think it's going to help us all remember. And you know what? Details matter. You say, oh, I just forgot. So someday you work for a mechanic, and you forget to put those lugs on the tire, and a guy drives down the road and the tire falls off. And, well, I just forgot. This is not going to work to just, I forgot. All right? So 5% off, please see if you can do a little better. In other words, yeah, I'm not happy with it, but really, at the end of the day, it's about you. All right? So keep thinking of that. Are the rules about you? Is the focus on you, the student? What do they need? What develops their character? What helps them? Not, I'm frustrated and I'm annoyed at this, and so here's just one more thing that I want you to do or not to do to make my life easier. Again, I think they'll smell that motivation actually pretty quick. State them clearly. Clearly. I've used this illustration with my students sometimes. I have former students sitting around here. I've talked about lines that are sort of like this, fuzzy lines, and lines that are like this. Should you have fuzzy lines?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
What? No. I'm going to see if I can change your mind. Well, I think there can be maybe some fuzzy lines if they're older students and if you're willing to fight the fight. Let me use this example. How many of you say, no whispering in class? No whispering in class. Raise your hand. Great. How many of you say, keep whispering at a minimum? Oh, okay, here we go. So, or maybe you don't say anything about it, and then that's what you have, no doubt. So, this sharp line is very clear. You're whispering. Now, wait a minute, you're not allowed to do that. This one, and this is the one I would have used in this case, I would have said, okay, you know, you're older students, they can handle it, and you have, you know, and then sometimes, now wait a minute, this is what's happening to my line, it's like this. Let's get it back to this, or else I have to go back to this, or this is just too much. So, and you can take the privilege away for a week. All right, for 1 week, and I certainly had to do that with certain students, if not the whole class, I'm going to just say no whispering, because it's obvious this is beyond what I would want and expect, and I think you know that. So let's just say for a week, just zero whispering, as in no whispering. Well, what if I need no whispering? If you need something from somebody else, you have to just come and ask me to help bring this back in line. But rather than take the privilege from everybody, or if the whole room is out of control, do something about it. So maybe you can handle some of that, but the more fuzzy lines you have, the more frustration, and then when are you going to decide, whoa, it's gone too far, and how do you handle it at that point? You know, are you just having a bad day, and so suddenly, whoa, crack down on that? Are you frustrated with a particular person? So I agree with what you said. Not many fuzzy lines. Again, it depends on your culture, the grades, the atmosphere of that group. Some groups can handle it and some cannot. All right, let's look at some more practical things. Give clear instruction for how homework is to be done. I'm just going to run through some very simple things and then see what you have to say, if you have some things to add. But tell the students. Teachers sometimes complain that, oh, I can't believe this homework paper. They come in, and I've seen this kind of thing in my room as well. I mean, it's number one, number two, number three. It's all the home, that whole math lesson is jammed into the top of the paper. That's pretty frustrating, isn't it? Especially when they don't circle the answers. And they write small, and you just can hardly find the answers. Well, one great idea that I've come across from a teacher is they use this for algebra and all different grades. They simply put it in blocks. It's especially for math. Maybe about that many blocks. However it works for you. And that's what they misuse. It's a photocopy for them every single day. And I've seen their work come in like that, and it looks very nice. Anybody use that here? Okay, just a few. But again, it's not the only way to do it, obviously. But 1, 2, 3, 4. Now you must have your work in those blocks. How easy now it is to find number 15. Right there it is. Photocopied on both sides. Where's number 18? Over there. That, there it is. Now do you need scrap paper to work out those little problems? Oh no, you don't. You got room. Your work must be on your paper. Because there's room, and now if number 4 is wrong, why is it wrong? Oh, you forgot to invert your fraction. That's why it's wrong, rather than, well, it's on a piece of scrap paper. Where is that? It's in the trash can, of course. Or you can't find it. How are you going to find that problem? So I find this to be an excellent way to organize. So rather than just be frustrated, tell them how you want it. This is how I want it, neat, etc. Have policies for handling incomplete or late work. I think this is a very significant one. And I would encourage your school to have a policy, and that's what you stick with, rather than every teacher decide based on each student. Now, I know you need some flex here with particular needs. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying for the average. And that is consistent throughout the school. Like when you have your first late, in our school, that's what we had done. First marking period, the first one, you got to pass on. Why? Well, because sometimes we teachers forget things, too, and we're giving them some grace. The second paper, you lose a certain percent. The third paper, it's steeper yet, and the parents get notified. And there's forms to fill it out. So if my child has a late paper, he got to bring a paper home. I have my first late for the quarter, Dad. Got to sign it. What were the consequences? No consequence, first one. That starts to build the consequences, of course. Get into the second marking period, all gets erased, and you start over. And it's worked, I would say, very well for maybe fourth grade and up. We've been on that for years. Everybody does it the same. It's not that, well, that student really irritates me. Now, you know, you're getting a zero on that paper. Oh, I don't have that prerogative to do. No, there's policy. So good days, bad days, strict teachers, not so strict teachers, students that you tend to favor, students that you find a little frustrating. It just makes a consistent way of handling it, and nobody can say, well, you're picking on me. And parents also appreciate it because it's methodical, and that's how it's done, especially in a larger school. But I would encourage you to think about that, creating structure that everybody has in place and is predictable. Yes, do you have a question? All right. You've never seen that. Good, but probably some of us have at least been suspicious. Now you're not suspicious of the student, you're suspicious of the parent. It moves it to a different level, doesn't it? What are your thoughts? All right. And so would you ask the child, is this your handwriting? And if they say, no, it's my mom's, now what?
It needs to be redone in their handwriting.
Okay.
I think then, if that's, I agree with what Wes said there, that would be a good way to handle that for the student side of it. I think that's probably where most of us as teachers should then go straight to the board, school board. At least that's probably what I would do.
Yeah.
Principal or school board, something
right.
Like that.
That's a very touchy situation because you don't want to act, you don't want to react in alarm to the student. Your mom did that? Well, what? You know, wow. That reflects now on the parents. So you never want to create that loyalty struggle between parents and you. Yeah, administration maybe, especially if it happens more than once. Maybe there was really a reason that, you know, the parent. They gave the answers and the parent quickly filled it out. I mean, handle very, very, very gently. Maybe you could let it go a time or so. I don't know.
What
Depends a little bit.
Tighter, yeah.
What's that?
What even makes it tighter?
Oh, yes.
Is when they, well, Mom helped me.
It has to be in your own handwriting. That's a very good point. But be sensitive to other dynamics that may be played into it in ways that you didn't see and, oh, okay, it looks a little different then. Yes.
I guess I know my parents well enough that if something came into mind, I would send them a message or a call and say, this doesn't look like your child's handwriting. Is there a reason somebody else wrote it?
Because it could be it was a sibling. Right, exactly. And it could be it was a sibling. And the parents didn't even know either. You know, it's big sister helping out a little bit. Yes, if you're in a culture, a smaller school, you know the parents very well, and you feel comfortable asking, yes. Because you don't want to make a real big deal of it. That the board chairman calls within 45 minutes and said, hey, what's going on here, Rob? Wow. You know. So, a lot of variables here. Yes.
Sometimes one of his parents, his mom, I don't know if his dad did it, but would actually, he would say the answer and they would write down what he said.
Okay.
So it was his answer, but it was not in his handwriting.
Okay. So there.
I've done that with him myself. Because it goes faster.
Good point. So understanding the situation is very important. All right. Establish clear procedures for coming in to the classroom for dismissal. Again, it varies, but I am impressed when I see that. The bell rings. And it's predictable what to do. Have you ever seen this rush for the lunch boxes and lunch and coats? And it's very rude. And out the door. And I was substituting last year to school where I had taught that grade, I think maybe a previous year, substituted. Sixth grade, I believe. And the bell rang. And I wasn't quite sure what's the policy because I kind of came in last minute because the teacher was sick. And all those sixth graders, about 15 of them, they all got up, got their snack or whatever, and they lined up at the door. She stood there. Oh, okay. Let's see, I think this is now me. I said, okay, so where do we go from here? Well, we decide whatever, and we go out. Okay, you're excused. They opened the door, they walked quietly. That was a very large school. All walked quietly out through past classrooms and out the door. When the bell rang, they all lined up again outside, sixth graders. Well, that is pretty good. I like that. In fact, at our school, I think through sixth grade, they must line up mornings and recesses, they all line up. So, what's the reason? Well, if you're out on the ball field and the bell rings and those two boys can run as fast as they can run, crashing into the school, you know, it's 2 minutes till you get there. It's not to be distrustful, it's just not really always a good feeling, is it? What was going on? No, you go, you can run, but you stay outside. You're at the head of the line, you open the door, okay, let's quietly go in, get your drinks. Hugely different than children just running in inside. They're milling around, laughing. What do I want? Now you finally get in. All right, take your seats. Get back to order. You don't have to do that to 9th and 10th graders. They probably wouldn't really like that, and you shouldn't have to do that. Again, you're in control. You can tell them how it works. Maybe they didn't do it last year. Maybe it's not necessary. Maybe your school setting or amount of students you have, you don't have to do that. That's one thing you certainly can do. Make sure they know when they can talk and when they must be quiet. Where to stand for singing. What an opportunity for students to, again, create trouble, right? They stand up there and they're best friends and they're soon whispering, something's going on behind their books. I'll tell them where to stand. All right, here's our standing arrangement. You may not change without permission, etc. Give me some ideas. I mean, there's so many, many things that I don't want to give a whole lot because it applies to whatever works for you, different situations. Can you give me some things that you found that when I put this policy in place, structurally, this just it solved a big problem, and it was a little solution. Anything at all?
I had trouble with my kids spending time in the bathroom, like after recess and stuff. I had 8 little boys, and it would take them forever, and it was loud in there. And finally, I was like, y'all have 1 minute to be back, and it worked.
Good.
By the time we're in, they were in, they got the
Excellent, excellent. What a good example of something that is annoying or frustrating, but you know it's bad for them too. It's not just annoying to yourself, right? You know this is not good. And what do you do? This is a pretty common complaint. the hallways are noisy, the restrooms are noisy, it takes them so long. I've already had to tell, this was actually 7th, 8th grade, because of some challenges with a few students, they simply may not go into the restroom after break time, period. Use the restroom before you go out, you come back in, you must go to the classroom. You may not go in there. Well, my hair. Yes, your hair. Get into the classroom. Now, if you need to use the restroom at some point, maybe permission, maybe one out of the room at a time, or you've got to make a mark every time you leave the room. We did that. Just make a mark there, and we just know that, okay, hey, I had to make that mark. I was out of the room. No, wait a minute. You got two marks. That should be enough. Just little ways of, you know where your students are, but excellent idea of a timer. Here's the restrictions, and then they need to obviously cooperate accordingly. Very good. Take care of problems when they are little. Little problems, little solutions. Big problems, big solutions. My students know that little saying, because I could go to them and say, we have a little problem, and this is a little solution. If we have a big problem, we need a big solution. Take care of the problems when they're little. Involve the parents quickly when there's violation to policies and rules. How often have you, well, I certainly, of course, know what this feels like, had a nagging issue, you let it go, and you let it go another day, it bugs you after school, you can hardly sleep, and you roll around, and you finally go talk to the student, and they respond very well. And it's like, whew, why didn't I do that a few days ago? You know what I mean? It just having the courage to address it when it's small. So back to this line. If you draw this line, no whispering, do you really mean no whispering? What do you do the first time you see somebody whispering? Hope it goes away, they don't do it again. Okay. So this is pretty easy for teachers to do, to be watching them whispering, right? Kind of watching them, a little worried. They're whispering, then they look at you, and then you look elsewhere. Well, keep looking at them. I mean, let them know you saw them. But it's easy to, you know, it's a little intimidating, you know, because now you have to do something because they know that you saw it. If you have a rule, then you better enforce it. If no whispering, then it is no whispering. Or they'll whisper again and again, and then you talk to them. Well, how much sense does that make? Or somebody else starts whispering and you talk to them. It's like, they were whispering yesterday and you didn't do anything. Oh yeah, but you know, now you're trapped, right? If you have a policy, take care of it and do it right away the first time it happens. It will save yourself a lot of grief and frustration from the students. Students will not respect you if you don't follow through with the rules that you've made. Be flexible for students with learning challenges and special needs. There's a lot of discussion in the schools about this, and there needs to continue to be. What do we do with students? Maybe trauma children, hyperactive children, whatever titles you think they should have. And I'm gonna just give one caution about this. My student has ADHD. How many know that term? Okay, most do. My student has RADS, R-A-D. My student has defiant disorders. Let's be careful with those terms. There is a point in those terms, especially I think RADS. The more I think about that and work with some special needs children, yes, there's reasons for these terms. There are hyper children, ADHD. My name is Anthony Dean Hurst, ADH. I mean, I get it. But we can use it as a label for, well, that's just what they have. I would say it's a little more what they do rather than it's what they have, as in a disease. It explains a behavior at best. It does not explain necessarily a handicap that they have. Okay, so let's be careful with that. Sort of for another time, another discussion possibly, but being fair and flexible with students with special needs is so important that you don't have, well, this is the rules and you have no flex with those students. You need an understanding. Sometimes students do have a hard time fitting in and you need to decide what to do about that. I just don't have time to really talk more about that. Be careful not to overreact when there's a problem. Take time to pray. We were discussing this either here or last week at Ebenezer. When do you take care of a problem? Must you take care of it on the spot? What do you think? What kind of problem can you take care of on the spot? Give me some things. Got your rules, got your policies. You don't want it getting out of hand, and you just need to identify it right away. Any ideas?
Whispering in class.
All right, so you would call them out.
Sure.
I'd like to see you do that. You didn't do that when I visited you the other day, or last year.
Did they whisper?
No. Ah, caught me. Yes, no. No, it was great. Yes, I agree 100% with you. So if they're whispering and your policy is just hey, you're not supposed to be whispering, please cooperate.
Mm-hmm. I usually try to take care of it the same day, or so the child knows I forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, as elementary students, they can sometimes it helps to have it dealt with in the same day.
Yes, I agree. So things that are clear violations like that, to identify right away, or even just say, this is the second time you're whispering, actually I'm going to want to talk to you at recess, and you move on. It sends a signal that I saw it, I need to think about it, and the other students know it. So things that were publicly done that were disrespectful, not cooperating, spitballs, whatever. Hey, I saw that, I'm gonna need to talk to you at recess. It does give you a little bit of time. But to stop the class and then try to figure it out right there can put you in a very awkward position. Now, some of you know this story, but I'm gonna tell for the sake of those who don't. This happened about 3-4 years ago. I was administrator in the school. I think I'd just come back from Columbia. I think it was that school year. So it was more like 5 years ago, maybe. And I taught Spanish for grades 9 and 10 because I came in the middle of the year. They asked me to come back as administrator, and then maybe I would teach classes later, in which I did. So teaches Spanish to grade 9 and 10, and a class here and a class there. And I walked into the classroom, and I said, hi, everybody, and we're ready for Spanish and whatever, I said. And out of thin air, as I cannot believe, there were 16 pillows. Just literally, I don't know where they had them, in their back pockets or where. But these were full-size pillows. Every single student pulled out a big pillow, put it on their desk, and... and one of them was my son. And I, pillows. Everyone, boys and girls. And I just stood there a little bit, and they... a couple of people, I'm standing there. Okay, so I'm thinking, what's going on here? Well, the day before, they had been on their school trip. And it had gotten very late because of bus trouble. And they had asked my son, hey, we bring pillows? Of course, I didn't know that at this point. Will your dad get mad? And my boy said, nah. I don't think so. Let's do it. So they all had these pillows, and I paced back and forth a little bit, and I finally said, just a minute. And I slipped out, ran down the hallway, ran down the steps, ran into the furnace room, and I rang the fire alarm. And all those students got up. I mean, they were about half of them grabbed their pillows under their arm and out the door. The whole school, of course, is going out. And in our school, we have what's called groups. So the 9th and 10th graders are all group leaders, and all these other ones belong to their groups. So all these 1st graders, 2nd graders, they're looking at these boys. They're carrying them the whole way across the ball diamond, probably 500 feet. So now they're all perfectly lined up, 1st grade, 2nd grade, 3rd grade. Here's 9 and 10, half of them with their pillows. I'm back at the school, of course, and the teachers are, what in the world? Pillows! Ask them. Yep, we got pillows today. So we rang the bell, and they all walked back in again, and all sat there. I said, all right, good joke. I got it back in you a little bit, right? And we laughed, and they put them back in their desk, and it was successful for them, and it gave me a funny moment of teaching. Sometimes they do things that it feels a little bit like, wow, a little bit of guts. But I would rather deal with some of that than at the other end where you just can't talk to them, can't relate to them because you know, they're afraid of you and you're afraid of them and there's a lot of disrespect going on and et cetera. So if I would have stood there and said, pillows, ridiculous. Where does this come from? This is school. I'm not taking a nap. No? Come on. Put your pillows away. I'm ready for Spanish. All right, let's go. I had a minute, kind of a bomber of a class, don't you think? Plus, it wouldn't have a story to tell. So, but I would have felt awkward. And they would have felt like, oh, come on, teacher, can't you just play along with something one time? And so now, if the next week or the next time they would pull out pillows or they would do something else, all right, that's going too far. But sometimes there's something that happens that we just got to kind of roll with the punches and, all right, and move on, rather than react in a way that is awkward for everybody. Be careful not to expect more of your students than yourself. Teachers, do you realize at teacher meetings how much problems we have being on time? How we tend to sit in the back? I'm not talking about you. You're probably the last ones in. How we tend to struggle with paying attention. How about being polite? I tried this here, and I tried this at another school thing recently. I held the door open as people went through. What percent do you think say thank you? Less than 50. That's okay. I don't know if it was you or not. But isn't it interesting how we drill that in our students? I can remember watching this in schools. You know, the first person holds the door open. Thank you. Thank you. Every person. And boy, they better would, right? You have manners. You're thankful. But when the student holds the door open for us, do we say thank you? So we can expect them to have the disciplines, be on time, remember things, pay good attention. But then ourselves, well, we're teachers and, you know, it's just, they're watching us. Remember that. Apologize when you make a mistake. That brings respect, not disrespect. God bless you as you go into this school year. Take the authority God has given you. And I hope it goes very well. Lord willing, we'll see you next year.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.